Welcome to Chip Health with Dr. Hans Diehl. On today's broadcast, we'll discover effective ways to be healthy by choice and not by chance. Gaining and maintaining optimum health is possible at any age. That's what thousands are learning at the complete health improvement programs offered across the country and around the world. The results are proven. The benefits, priceless. I'm your Chip Health host, Charles Mills. I've got one of my favorite guests on the show today. Dr. Michael Greger takes a lot of the burden of keeping up with the latest in clinical nutrition off my shoulders by doing what I consider to be the impossible. He reviews every English language paper that's released each year on the subject of nutrition, every one of them. Then he compiles the most relevant and important material into a very entertaining DVD and website. I love this guy. Dr. Greger, welcome back to Chip Health.
Thank you so much for having me back.
Okay, let's dig right in. Your Volume 7 DVD highlighted, along with 52 other topics, the subject of allergies, both in children and adults. What's the latest buzz concerning this all-too-common ailment?
All-too-common and increasing in prevalence.
Yes.
The so-called atopic diseases, food allergies, asthma, hay fever, eczema, appear to be increasing year by year. And so it's a hot research field. And the latest study out of Japan, looking to see whether or not the westernization of the Japanese diet could account for this dramatic rise in incidence. Mm-hmm. And so what they looked at is maternal intakes of meat during pregnancy were significantly associated with an increased risk of a physician-diagnosed eczema, which is this kind of allergic dermatitis, gives you a kind of a red, itchy, bumpy rash.
Uh-huh.
During pregnancy, cutting down on meat consumption may decrease the risk of allergic diseases. What about for the children after they're born? Well, we had a study in Poland last year found that that restricting meat in children continue to protect against allergy. We think the meat may actually be affecting the immune system, both the fetus and the infant, in such a way as to decrease the inflammation that can trigger some of these diseases. And indeed, in terms of adults, according to the longest-running study on history comparing vegetarians and non-vegetarians, which was, of course, the Adventist study,
mm-hmm.
women who eat meat appear to have 30% greater chance of reporting chemical allergies, 24% more asthma, 14% more drug allergies, more bee sting allergies, more hay fever. Similar results in men. So it's not just food allergies, but all across the board, this kind of hypersensitivity of the immune system seems to be abolished when eating a plant-based diet. There does seem to be this kind of a favorable effect for plant-based diet on the prevalence of allergies, both through infancy, childhood, and adulthood.
Now, Dr. Greger, you're a physician and a scientist. Can you tell us why this is happening? I mean, if the mother is eating meat, the unborn child develops more allergies. Make the connection here for us.
Well, we don't know. Bottom line is that we don't know what it is in the meat. They thought maybe it was the saturated fat, but no, it did not. After controlling for that, that didn't seem to affect the findings. They thought maybe it's the cooked meat carcinogens, these so-called heterocyclic amines. These cooked meat chemicals are produced, particularly when frying or grilling, broiling meat. But they found out, no, it didn't matter kind of the cooking method. So they kind of threw that theory out the window. And basically, they finally ended up saying, well, look, maybe it's the mercury, dioxins, these industrial pollutants that have built up in the food supply. They've kind of so contaminated the world, but there's a biomagnification as you go up the food chain. So there's a little in plants, but a lot more in animals, and
right.
even higher in animals that eat animals. And, of course, in modern industrial agriculture, we feed millions of tons of the fat taken at the slaughter plant from these animals back into animal feed. So we've kind of turned them not only into meat eaters, but cannibals as well.
Mm.
And so that's why, you know, you think, well, how much of these toxins can there be just in herbivores, those eating plants? But no, we're actually eating kind of reading like the bald eagles. We're eating, you know, the sharks. We're eating
yes.
way at the top of the food chain
yeah.
when we're eating meat, dairy, and eggs in this society.
My. That biomagnification, that is getting to us, isn't it?
Yeah, it's unfortunate. And so, you know, maybe a few centuries ago, this would not have been such a problem. But as we see, there's this dramatically increasing risk in allergic diseases, and this may be the explanation.
My. Okay. All right, let's talk a little bit more about how to have healthy kids here. We've already identified one of the problems that creates childhood allergies, and that's the mom eating meat. Let's talk about the environment of the home. You had a section in this DVD about household products, and I know a lot of people just love the smell of certain household products. They like to spray it, and they walk through it, and they say, oh, that's wonderful. They want to have their clothes smelling like a pine forest. Is there a price we're paying for enjoying these household scents?
Yeah, it turns out that these volatile chemicals in consumer products, such as, you know, air fresheners, laundry detergents, fabric softeners, dryer sheets, may indeed be hazardous, associated with allergies in children, with allergies, asthma, eczema. So this is research out of Harvard. What they did was they collected air samples from where children slept in children's bedrooms and demonstrated for the first time that the bedroom concentration of some of these chemicals, particularly what's called propylene glycol and glycol ethers, found in these consumer products was significantly associated with elevated risk of multiple allergic symptoms like, you know, runny nose, eczema, these kind of things. And these chemical compounds are found in paints and pesticides and varnishes, cleaning fluids. Mm. So again, yet another reason why we may be seeing this increase in risk of these kind of diseases over the last few decades. And so they put, consumer products to the test, all the big ones. They only looked at consumer products with annual sales over $100 million. So these were absolutely the top sellers.
Yes.
In each one of them, in the top air freshener, the top laundry detergent, over 100 volatile chemicals were identified. Although, you know, you don't find those on the label. You know, they don't have to, by law, list them because it's not a food. But we're consuming them into our body in other forms just by breathing them in. And so you say, okay, well look, what about the naturally scented products? But even they found products advertised as, you know, green, natural, organic, emitted many of these hazardous chemicals. Mm-hmm. In some cases, as many as the standard ones. It's important that really the best smell when it comes to consumer products is no smell at all.
No smell at all. Okay. I'm reminded of that movie that came out a number of years ago, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. And even in that movie, the mother had mixed up some chemicals at the beginning and washed the kids' clothes in it and then absorbed by the kids. So maybe that movie was sort of prophetic. We're sort of heading in that direction.
Indeed. Maybe.
Oh, my goodness. We're talking with Dr. Michael Greger here. He is the founding member of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine, and he's a physician, author, an internationally recognized speaker on nutrition, food safety, and public health issues. He's also currently serves as director of public health and animal agriculture at the Humane Society of this country. And I just enjoy talking with him because he seems to know just about everything there is to know about nutrition because he spends a great deal of his time studying this. And I'm so glad he does that. Now, Dr. Greger, you have over the years identified yourself very clearly as a tea drinker. You will identify this tea and that tea. Are you still a green tea guy, or have you found something better than green tea?
Well, certainly it seems to be that. We have a huge body of data to suggest that green tea, in fact, the one just came out last week in Japan showing that those that drink green tea in old age have lower rates of functional disability, even after controlling for all the other factors they could think of. So green tea is good, but when 283 beverages were recently tested for antioxidant content, these anti-aging, antioxidant, anti-cancer antioxidants, they tested everything across the board. I mean, I don't think I could even name 100 beverages, but they, but clearly almost 300 beverages they looked at, some of which I've never even heard of. And what they found was that there was a beverage that beat out green tea in terms of antioxidant content. And you know, I was afraid it would be something that, you know, would be so exotic you could never even get it, you know, some Amazonian berry or something. But no, it turns out that hibiscus, what puts the kind of zing in red zinger tea, hibiscus is this bright red flower, and the flower is basically just, that's the tea, the petals of the hibiscus flower, and it's cheap, it's easy to find anywhere, and that actually may be the healthiest thing to drink on the planet. And you don't have to worry about caffeine, you don't have to worry about interference with iron absorption like you do with the green tea, so you can drink it with meals. And so that's what I've been drinking lately. Now, I used to get the zinger tea, but I found it's just cheaper to get it in bulk. You can just get the bulk hibiscus flowers. I just throw a handful of water. I just cold brew it in the fridge, and the next morning I have this, you know, this kind of nice, this brilliant red, you know, kind of fruit punchy type drink. And so that's kind of my new favorite drink for my family.
Well, you know, I enjoy so much watching these DVDs because I watch you as you take your family higher and higher and higher on what's good for them. And I see the change that's taking place. But of course, your message is, you know, if you don't like hibiscus tea, stick with green tea. You're not saying that, you know, don't drink something else because hibiscus is the best. Am I right?
Oh, absolutely. No, in fact, I mean, the healthiest, obviously, is the one you're going to drink a lot.
That's
if you don't
right.
like the taste,
right.
I mean, if you have to hold your nose to drink it, well, obviously, that's not sustainable.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the same thing with the green tea. I mean, same thing, you know, I mean, there's actually data to show that there are beneficial effects of coffee, actually.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just a powdered seed in water.
Yes.
But I don't encourage people to drink coffee because green tea is healthier. But again, if you don't like green tea, same thing with the berries. Yes, blackberries are healthier than strawberries. But if you're going to eat, you know, five times more strawberries than blackberries just because you love them so much, then in the end, you'll actually end up better off.
All right. I like that. The message is, you know, take what you like. I mean, and that's what's so cool about a plant-based diet. There is so much to like out there.
Oh, absolutely. And you basically cannot make any wrong choices if you're choosing whole plant foods.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you see a lot of my videos on my website where I talk about, you know, which is the best legume, which is the best bean, the best apple, the best berries, the best beverage. And it's basically saying, look, if you like them all the same, like if you don't care what kind of apple you eat, okay, well, this apple has twice as many antioxidants or polyphenols or other phytonutrients than this apple. And so, you know, you're getting kind of two apples worth. But, you know, if you just don't like that kind of apple, then eat any kind of apple.
Very good. Very, very good. I'm going to take a short break right now. When we come back, I want to talk to you about vitamin B12. You have several sections of this DVD. This is volume 7 I'm looking at that came out a couple of months ago. On that subject, vitamin B12 is important to everyone, especially to those who are on a plant-based diet. Let's find out what the latest recommendations are for that and how we can make sure that we have enough of a very good thing. So everybody stay right where you are. Looking older than you feel or feeling older than you look, there may be a good reason why, and you can change it. A recent study of women revealed that prolonged stress can actually alter chromosomes in cells, adding years to biological age. But it's not stress, it's our reaction to it. Fight back by accepting what you can't control, keeping weight down, removing yourself from as many stressful situations as you can, and strengthening your faith in God.
Concerned about those extra pounds, high blood pressure, diabetes, cholesterol, depression, and heart disease? I'm Dr. Hans Dio, inviting you to join the people in the know and enroll in the next CHIP program in your area. It can make all the difference.
For more information about the Complete Health Improvement Program and to transform CHIP's proven results into priceless benefits for you and your family, visit chiphealth.org. Welcome back to the program. I'm Charles Mills with Dr. Michael Greger. Dr. Michael Greger is a man who is very dedicated to giving us information. He spends his days, and I suppose some of his evenings, researching to make sure that we have the very latest in clinical nutrition. And at the beginning of his video, he says he does that so we won't have to. So I appreciate that, Dr. Greger. You have no idea how much I appreciate that. By the way, listener, all of the information you're listening to here from Dr. Greger, as well as the information on the DVDs and DVDs now and past, are on an incredible website. website. I want you to visit it, nutritionfacts.org, nutritionfacts.org. You can look at all of the material that's on the DVDs there as well. You can also leave messages for him, ask him questions, and in his spare time, which I think is like Thursdays between 3:05 and 3:06, he will answer them for you. So just leave your questions there. Comment. He's also on Facebook. I'm a friend of his on Facebook. You can do that too. Just look for Michael Greger, G-R-E-G-E-R. You will enjoy interacting with this man. Okay, vitamin B12. This pops up quite regularly on your DVD series. What is it about B12 that is so important, and what's the latest on that wonderful little vitamin that we need to know?
Well, so I talk about what the best way to get our vitamin B12. And the reason it comes up is because B12 is not made by plants, unlike most vitamins, but it's not made by animals either. It's made by certain bacteria, some of which line the guts of animals, of which people eat and drink, but that's not the best source, because of the baggage that comes along with it, right? Food is a package deal. Just like you can't get the iron in beef without the saturated fat, the protein in pork without getting lard, the calcium in dairy without all the hormones, you can't get the B12 in animals without consuming stuff you don't want, like cholesterol. Mm-hmm. Yes, eggs have B12. You have chickens harbor bacteria. The bacteria make B12, makes it into the chicken, then into the egg, but so does all the cholesterol. You'd literally have to eat hundreds of scrambled eggs a day, literally hundreds, to get the right amount of B12 because the absorption is so low. But you'd get like, a year's worth of cholesterol every day if you had to get your B12 through eggs. You know, the safest way to get B12 is through vitamin B12 supplements, where you get the B12 directly. It's very cheap and effective, efficient, and or B12 fortified foods. There's a number of foods on the market which have B12 added to them. Most of the breakfast cereals, non-dairy milks, many of the meat analogs also have B12 added to them. And not only is that the safest source, because you just get what you want without the stuff you don't want, but it's also the most effective. In the U.S. Framingham Offspring Study, 1 in 6 meat eaters between ages, this was in their 30s, 40s, 50s, were B12 deficient. And you think, well, but they're eating a lot of animals which have those bacteria. Well, it turns out that that animal products are not as consistent a source of B12 as we thought. And the folks in that study with the best B12 status weren't the ones eating the most meat. They're the ones eating most breakfast cereal, right? Or the ones taking a multivitamin with B12 or taking B12 directly. And so the safest, most effective source is through vitamin B12 fortified foods or B12 supplements.
Are there different kinds of B12s? I know there's different kinds of different vitamins. Are there certain blends necessary, or should we just get the cheapest B12 we can find at the nutrition store?
Cheapest B12 you can find. So the cheapest you can find is what's called cyanocobalamin, and the stuff is so cheap to make, and you need so little of it, that supplement manufacturers are constantly trying to find ways to put out value-added products to get you to plunk down $20 for a bottle of pills. It's like the calcium story, right? Calcium carbonate is chalk, right? Literally chalk.
Yes.
You can't get cheaper than that. And so that's why calcium supplements are so cheap. But you're not making any money for these pharmaceutical companies, these supplement companies that produce these, and so they come out with with coral calcium or with all sorts of ridiculous, flim-flam kind special calcium. So they can charge a lot of money, but no, there's no evidence to show that that's superior. Same thing with B12. So cheap, simple, you can get $5 to get you enough B12 for the whole year, and so they come out with methylcobalamin and all these other fancy, expensive, and they claim on the label that it's better, or they don't claim because that's illegal, but they imply that it's better, but it's not. The safest, most effective source is also the cheapest, cyanocobalamin. So that's the one we should pick at the store.
I'm so glad to have you clarifying these things for us, because a lot of us get confused. We go and we see all these different kinds of vitamin B12s and all these different kinds of herbs and whatnot, and it seems this value added is not adding as much value as we think it is. I think that's the message you're trying to tell us.
In many cases, it's not, right? Okay. These are just marketing scams. They're just out to make money, and unfortunately, so there's no, your health is not their bottom line. Mm-hmm. The bottom line is their bottom line.
All right. Okay, well put, well put. We're talking with Dr. Michael Greger about nutrition today. He reviews every English language paper on the subject year after year, and he puts the results on a DVD called Latest in Clinical Nutrition. I have Volume 7 with me right now. Also, a website, nutritionfacts.org, is someplace else you can get all this information as well. Give that a check out. I would appreciate it. Okay, item number 35 on this Volume 7 was soy. Poor soy. Every time I turn around, somebody's doing something with soy, and they're either condemning it or blessing it. What's the latest on soy?
So there's some new research now. Are soybeans better than other types of beans for heart disease prevention? Or does the soy industry just have more money and kind of clout to tout it? For over a decade, soy foods have had this rare privilege. They have an FDA-approved food label health claim. I was just talking about health claims. Yeah. Well, soy can actually, on soy products, you actually have a health claim saying that soy protects against heart disease. Now, you know, soy is a multi-billion dollar industry. They have a lot of money to fund the research. So the question is, it's undeniable that soy protects against heart disease, but is it possible that other beans, like pinto beans, navy beans, other beans also protect against heart disease? They just don't have the money to fund the studies to present to the FDA to get that kind of approval for a health claim?
Are you telling me there's a soy lobby out there somewhere?
There's a huge soy lobby. It's a big industry. But the poor U.S. Dry Bean Council, which represents all the other beans except soy, does not have the same kind of money.
Gotcha.
But there was a study out of Tulane last year that finally looked at what about the cholesterol-lowering power of non-soy legumes. Mm-hmm. Now, there's all sorts of beans out there. So the question is, which did better about lowering our number one risk factor, LDL cholesterol, bad cholesterol, for number one killer heart disease? And so soy consumption drops bad cholesterol on average about 4 points, which is good. Yeah. Every percentage drop in LDL cholesterol, you probably get a 2 or 3% drop in heart disease risk. But the other beans, you know, the lentils, the lima beans, navy beans, pinto beans, drop cholesterol 8 points, bad cholesterol 8 points, right? So they were twice as powerful as the soy in dropping cholesterol. And so even though on a can of baked beans, it's actually illegal for them to say this will help prevent heart disease because they don't have the FDA approval, but soy really isn't that special in that regard. All beans are beautiful, and in this case, actually beat out soy 2-1.
What I'm discovering as I listen to you and as I listen to your DVD and watch it and check your website out is that it seems like every year they're discovering more and more good things about plants and more bad things about animal products. Am I on the right track here?
And that's what we've seen literally for decades. I mean, it's got to the point where, I mean, you can almost predict what's got, I can read the title, and the title will be like, oh, so does, you know, broccoli prevent this kind of cancer, cervical cancer, whatever. You know, and you're like, well, you know, I cover up the rest of the article and I say, okay, I've got a guess that, and, you know, I'm not a gambling man, but you can do pretty well. And this is even in the light of all the industry funding, right? All the corporate funding going into these and still coming out. So I talk about a study, the Harvard Nurses study looking at dairy consumption and acne, for example. Mm-hmm. This was a study funded in part by the National Dairy Council. And even though they got funding from the dairy industry, they couldn't help but find out that indeed dairy consumption, particularly skim milk consumption, significantly raised the risk of severe acne in adolescents. This is the women in high school. And so it's funny, even when the industry funds the study, they don't necessarily get what they're looking for in their results, and may think twice about giving money to researchers in the future.
I was going to say they probably had some committee meetings about those results, I think, yes. Okay, let's move on now to meat additives. Now, is the industry saying, we're hearing Dr. Michael Greger talk about what meat is lacking, so let's make up for it by just simply tossing it in there. Is that what's happening?
There's certainly a lot of that happening. So, for example, you know, we find that berries are good for us. Well, they're actually experimenting with trying to put berries in ground meat to actually improve the nutritional quality. But then they had all these problems, to kind of stain the meat. They tried to put blackberries in, but then the meat turned purple. And he said, well, people won't like that.
I think they're eating Barney there.
Right. Oh, that's terrible. They tried putting ground-up grape seeds in hot dogs, but then they saw the little flecks of the hot dogs, and the hot dog consumers didn't want to eat the hot dogs because they had little flecks in them, as if, you know, they hot dog eaters are particularly picky about what they put in their food. But so there was this article in the journal Meat Science. It's actually a meat science journal. And the title of the article says, should we become vegetarians or can we make meat safer? Mm-hmm. And so what they did, they said, look, we know there's the toxic effects of the heme iron, the blood iron, not the non-heme iron found in plant foods, but the blood iron found in meat. They know that that can have oxidant effects. And so they tried putting all these additives in. And they say they're looking for a quote unquote acceptable way to prevent colon cancer, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. Because not eating the meat, that's unacceptable. So this is the Meat Science Journal.
Yes,
what do you expect?
Yes.
So that's out of the question. So they're trying to find quote unquote acceptable ways. They're trying to find a magic bullet. But the problem is there's so many problems. There's so many. It's not just the non-heme iron. There's the industrial pollutants, et cetera. In fact, you just can't counteract all of them. So, and they talk very candidly in their publication. This is a trade publication saying, look, yes, if we reduce meat consumption, sure, cancer incidence would be reduced, but the meat industry would suffer economic problems. Mm. Right? They're explicit. They just say it right out. And so on one hand, you have people getting diagnosed, dying with cancer, destroying families. And on the other hand, we have the industry losing some money. Sounds like it's coming straight out of the tobacco industry or some of these pesticides, the chemical industries. So, no longer can they hide. Before they tried to say, tobacco industry says, oh, smoking's good for you, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Or then they changed to smoking's not bad for you. Well, that's what the meat industry used to say, right? They used to say, oh, it's not as bad for you as they say. Now they're basically laying it out and they're saying, look, yes, we know it's bad, but maybe there's some way we can find to mediate the change. Maybe we can make low tar cigarettes. Well, hey, maybe we can make low carcinogen meat. But they acknowledge that the best way to do it may be to reduce meat consumption overall.
Well, I certainly hope, listener, that you are paying close attention to what Dr. Greger is saying here, that you have a choice and you do not have to be sick because someone wants to make money off of you. You can make informed choices here. And one of the ways you can inform yourself is to get involved with Dr. Greger's website. That is www.nutritionfacts.org. Check that out. All of the information that you're hearing here is available there, as well as information on the other DVDs way back. We're talking about it's there. You don't have to order it from there. It's there. You look at it. You watch it. It's free. Dr. Greger has made that available. And also, you can friend him on Facebook, and you can keep up with what's going on.
I have links to all the new videos, all the new blogs. I talk about some of the oldie but goodie videos that are still up there that are relevant somehow to what's in the news today.
Okay, very good. And that is how you can inform yourself and keep up to date, and I recommend that you do that. We hope that you enjoy this program and these programs every week, and I want you to better yourself, and so does Dr. Greger. Dr. Greger, thank you very much. Always a pleasure having you on the program. Thank you.
Can't wait to come back.
All right. Until next time, listener, this is Charles Mills along with Dr. Michael Greger inviting you to begin enjoying health by choice, not by chance. Goodbye, everyone.